Welcome to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. I'm Jordan Edwards, Communications Associate at the BJC. Today we're going to have a very special conversation with our current and former executive directors. The Baptist Joint Committee started 2017 with a new executive director, Amanda Tyler. Amanda took the reins at the beginning of January, and she is with us today. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
And also with us is someone podcast listeners and BJC supporters know very well, the recently retired executive director of the Baptist Joint Committee, now executive consultant, Brent Walker. Hi, Brent. How you doing?
Fine, Jordan. How are you?
Good. So we've got you both here today to talk about your history and the transition to new leadership. But before we get into that, I want to start off with an overview of religious liberty today. As we start a new year, what do you both see as the biggest threat to religious liberty?
Well, thanks, Jordan. That's a great place to start. And there really are so many concerns to name. But as someone who cares so deeply about religious liberty, I'm very alarmed by how widespread and mainstream hateful rhetoric and hate crimes, in particular against minority religious groups, have become over the past several months. We at the BJC like to say when anyone's religious liberty is threatened, everyone's religious liberty is at risk. And of course, we ought know this often comes at the hands of government interference, but there are other ways that religious liberty can be threatened, and that can happen when a society becomes hostile to a particular group. So I view this as one of the many issues rising out of growing pluralism in the United States, and think that we as Baptists, with our history of being discriminated against and persecuted, that we have a unique voice to share at this time in this place.
Brent, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I agree with what Amanda has said. As a big picture item, it seems to me that there is a failure to appreciate the nature and importance of the separation of church and state to ensure religious liberty. Church-state separation is the means of protecting religious liberty under our constitutional system. Some people think that the separation of church and state is a myth, that we don't have and shouldn't have the separation of church and state in this country. I think they're absolutely wrong. We don't need to look to government to help us exercise and promote our religion and our religious message. But there's people on the other side who think that the separation of church and state is the end-all and be-all, that it's not a means to an end, but an end in and of itself. And, you know, when you take that position, you fail to appreciate the importance of accommodating religious liberty in our country. So I think one of the geniuses of the Baptist Joint Committee over the past 8 decades has been to get that tension right between no establishment and free exercise. We've always been a both and kind of agency that understands that you've got to have both. Separation of church and state is important to ensure religious liberty, and that requires us to pay great attention to the no establishment principle, also the free exercise principle, and kind of live in the tension that is created by those two all-important clauses in the First Amendment.
And Brent, one thing that the BJC has always maintained is a nonpartisan approach. And to me, that seems as important as ever, given the polarizing political climate as we go into the new administration.
You can't be partisan and do the work that we do well. You've got to be nonpartisan and, in some cases, bipartisan to work with both sides of the aisle.
Turning back to you, Amanda, you've only been executive director for a couple of weeks now, but you do have that long history with the Baptist Joint Committee, including working with Brent Walker and James Dunn. Amanda, how did you first learn about the BJC?
Well, my connection to the BJC now dates back more than 20 years. I was a college freshman at Georgetown University, and some good friends from home came up that first October when I was in college, I think, to visit me. They came up, I think, for a Baptist meeting. They came by to visit, to take me out to dinner, which is really important when you're a college freshman. And they also said, well, let me take you by, and you should meet these people, and they should meet you. So to say that that meeting didn't change the course of my life, that is not an overstatement. And that day I met Brent, I met James Dunn, I learned about the work that the Baptist Joint Committee did, and I kind of felt an instant connection.
And Brent, what were your impressions of the young Amanda Tyler?
She's exactly right. That's how I remember it. They brought her in to introduce her to me and to James. As I recall, that was when she volunteered to work at the BJC off and on in her spare time, as if Georgetown University is not going to keep her busy enough. And she did. She started volunteering and eventually became a member of the BJC staff.
What was your position when you were on staff? You were legal assistant, is that correct?
Right, assistant to the general counsel.
Okay.
It was Brent was transitioning to executive director. So I think Brent was there for a little bit, and then it was Melissa Rogers, and then Holly Holman.
The big piece of legislation, religious liberty legislation at that time, was the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, or RLUIPA. Amanda, you were right in the thick of that. So can you kind of talk about your experience during that time with RLUIPA?
Sure. So, of course, the Baptist Joint Committee had played a leadership role in the coalition that helped pass the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA, several years earlier. We won't go through all of the ins and outs and how it ended up, but
you can go to our website, bdconline.org/RFRA,
and learn about
and RLUIPA,
and learn that history. But my time at the BJC, we were really working on RLUIPA as a more tailored and targeted way to address the free exercise concerns. And my position on staff helped coordinate the coalition efforts. So all of those meetings that we would have. So I worked very closely with Melissa Rogers. But going to Georgetown University, you go to school and become friends with people who also have a lot of interest in politics. And one of my close friends in college, remains a close friend today, was working as the floor assistant for the majority leader. And we talked politics a lot. We didn't agree on all of the issues, but we agreed on religious liberty and the importance of that. And so I had been talking to him about our efforts on RLUIPA, and he knew about the legislation. And one afternoon in July, it was actually the last day that Congress was set to be in session in summer, July 2000, before they recessed for the summer, and we were hitting some legislative log jams in the Senate. And he called me that afternoon and said, if you can get the Senate to pass the bill this afternoon, we'll pass it in the House. And I said, okay. And I ran into Melissa Rogers' office and said, Melissa, and without missing a beat, she picked up the phone, and the bill passed the Senate, the bill passed the House, and it remains law today.
That's a wonderful example of both sides of the aisle coming together on a religious liberty issue, that they can bridge their differences and come together to pass a law that was very much needed and has proven to be wildly successful. I mean, those were just two issues that we were able to agree on despite our other differences: irresponsible and overbearing zoning and land use regulations, prisoners' rights, an extremely vulnerable population to religious liberty violations. So it all came together in a nice way. But the efforts that we had made earlier in RFRA and the goodwill that was born in those days made it easier to pass RLUIPA. Yeah, it still wasn't easy. I mean, I love that story. How they were
it's
able
such
to,
a great
to have it done.
Story too,
for all of our wrangling over language and other issues for a couple of years to have it hit that quickly. It's just an amazing lesson in how sometimes legislation does break loose quickly and we get things done here.
With two 22-year-olds.
Yeah,
exactly. They had not, and at this point, Amanda, you had not attended law school.
That's right.
So after you have interned and worked at the BJC as a staff member, you return to your home state of Texas and go to law school. You graduated from law school from the University of Texas in your— do you consider in Austin's your hometown?
That's right.
So you went home for law school. And then what happened? How did your voyage take off from there?
You know, professionally, I stayed in Texas for the next 11 years. Law school, I practiced law in Dallas is where I went right after. And then clerked for a federal judge and then practiced in a different firm. I returned at that point back to the political side and was working for a member of Congress. And it was about that same time that Brent called and said that I'd been suggested as a board member for the Baptist Joint Committee. And I was so honored and pleased and happy to accept that invitation and served as a board member for 6 years. And that really, you know, I had kept up my friendships and my contact with Brent and with Holly and with others who had been on the staff with me at the time, and both when I practiced law and then, of course, when I was working for the member of Congress, I had opportunities to come to Washington. And often when I would come to Washington, I would come by the BJC and say hello. So I felt connected, but being on the board offered that closer connection to the work and allowed me the opportunity to be up to date on all that was going on here.
And you were also nice enough to appear in a couple of our promotional videos.
Yes, yes.
As a monthly donor.
Exactly. So several years ago, I became a monthly donor because I was so invested, literally, in what work that the BJC was doing. So the BJC has been this, you know, stream running through my life for the past 20 years.
Now, we announced Brent's retirement and then the opening for the executive director position is there. What drew you to that position, to that ideal? Why did you apply for that position?
Well, it really kind of came over a number of months of discernment and conversation and prayer. Like many callings, it was just this abiding presence that really all the puzzle pieces of my life seemed to be falling into place for this position at this time. You know, from my Baptist upbringing and involvement in faith and my nearly lifelong interest in politics and government service and the law, and more recently, my professional experience in organizing, fundraising, and legislative work. The chance to bring all those together and to work on a cause that I feel so passionate about, I know that opportunity probably comes along once in a lifetime, if that. And I just knew that I needed to respond to that call. But I also knew from those many years ago of working here at the BJC what a wonderful place it is to work.
And the office is a lot nicer now than it was when you were here before.
That is true. That is true. There's some deja vu and some not so much because the beautiful work of the Capitol campaign and the renovations here. But I know that so much of the enjoyment, satisfaction of working here comes from the people, both the staff and our supporters. And the opportunity to work with them is just something I could not say no to.
We're looking forward to your first full year of events, the Religious Liberty Council luncheon and board meetings. And you're about to hit the road for the first time as executive director and speak at churches and things like that. What's your mindset right now?
Oh, very excited. Just knowing that we have so many challenges to respond to and so much work that we want to do, so much work to be done. Just trying to take it one day, one week at a time and know that we'll have the opportunities, but really excited to engage with our supporters and those who want to learn more about our work and to understand better what they most need and how we can respond to that. I'm excited about that.
Great, great. Brent, you've known Amanda for, I guess, you know,
20 years.
20 years now.
Yep.
Why do you think that she's going to be a good executive director?
Well, she's just so clearly qualified, intelligent, energetic, understands the issues. This will be or is the first time an executive director of the BJC has come into that position with legislative experience. I mean, she's been on the Hill for 6, 8, 10 years, and she has an understanding of how going all the way back to the RLUIPA days. Who would have guessed? But I think that's going to put her in a good position to lead. And then she's just such a good, nice, spiritually grounded person that going to allow her to lead the BJC in a way that we can all be proud of.
Now, Amanda, you're still getting your feet wet. You've only been here a couple weeks. But what do you see on the horizon for the BJC?
Well, when I look to the horizon, I can't help but look at where we are right now. And over the past 80 years, 80 plus years, the BJC has really developed the reputation of being such a trusted source of good and thoughtful work on religious freedom and separation of church and state and courts and the Congress among groups that do our work. And we've also worked hard to engage Baptists through denominational bodies and churches and individuals through the Religious Liberty Council. So I see that we're in a really good place. And I think we can continue and build on that work to expand our work, reach even more Baptists and non-Baptists, engage them in these important issues, and start advocating more in their local communities. With religious liberty issues, again, at the forefront, I see the BJC taking an even greater role in the public square, explaining what religious liberty is and what it is not, and why we as 21st century Baptists care about it so much, the freedom that we're trying to ensure and continue for generations to come.
At the BJC, we often say that we have three main activities: litigation, legislation, and education. And Brent, during his tenure, has really pushed forward the education part of that, not only the opening of the Center for Religious Liberty, which allows us to host groups for educational sessions, but also things like the Fellows Program and hiring Charles Watson Jr. as the education outreach specialist. And with you, with your congressional experience, and with Holly, with her Supreme Court experience, Holly Holman, our general counsel, it seems like there's a perfect, like, 1-2-3 punch right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I view these missions as really interactive, you know, as connected.
They cross each other, yeah.
Right. And the more that we can educate, the more we can influence in Congress and in the states, you know, and the more that we can pass good laws, the better outcomes we're going to have in the courts. And so I really think we will be pursuing on all three fronts, but really trying to engage more and more people and get the Baptist Joint Committee message about religious liberty out in conversations, start conversations in our communities.
Now, Brent, another one of your touchstones during your time as executive director, especially in the wake of 9/11 and the current climate, there's been a lot of anti-Muslim speech and rhetoric, and you've for years have been combating that and speaking against that. Amanda, you also share that passion for knowing your neighbor. We belong to a coalition called Know Your Neighbor, which invites people to interact with people in their community who are not of their faith. Why is that subject so important to you?
I view the Islamophobia, hate rhetoric, I view that as unfortunately all too mainstream right now. There's so much misunderstanding about this particular group's rights to religious liberty. And that's part of the Baptist story, is having been a religious minority, understanding what that's like. Now it's our responsibility to help protect that freedom for people of all faith and people of no faith. And I view that as rising to the top of issues to be concerned about. There's so much misunderstanding. And so the role that the Baptist Joint Committee can play in explaining why these are really religious liberty issues, I think will help foster understanding, greater understanding, moving beyond tolerance and into freedom, which is what we stand for here.
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time, and properly so, dealing with the relationship between church and state and the government and individual citizens. That vertical relationship, you know, goes to the heart of how well or poorly religious liberty is protected from governmental meddling or incursions. Equally important is that horizontal relationship that we all have with our neighbors. You know, your neighbor, shoulder to shoulder, all kinds of initiatives there that also not only encourage pluralism, but help protect religious liberty apart from the government. So I think you need both axes, both the vertical axis and the horizontal, to have a full-fledged, full-orbed understanding of American democracy and religious pluralism.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, as Amanda takes the reins here, Brent, do you have any advice for her? What kind of conversations have you had in terms of prepping Amanda and Amanda getting comfortable with the role of being executive director?
Well, you know, there are just a lot of specifics that we had to deal with. And, of course, she's such a quick study that, you know, she's got it right away. It doesn't take very long. But yeah, I would say to be yourself, Don't try to be Brent Walker, not that you would want to anyway, but that's just not going to work for you any more than if I had tried to be James Dunn. I couldn't be James Dunn. I had to kind of do my own thing and be who you are. And so I think that's important. And also to trust your staff. You've got a wonderful, smart, dedicated, committed staff that can push the BJC's vision and agenda forward in a way that I could not have done by myself, that you're not going to be able to do by yourself. So that's what I would say.
Amanda, you had a great role model here. What did you want to know from Brent as you were taking this role? What kind of things were you asking him?
Well, as Brent says, I think there are a lot of specifics. There's so much, not only on the legal side of these issues, but the theological side. And Brent has been wonderful in sharing the many resources that we have that undergird and inspire, you know, why we fight for these issues. That has been really wonderful. And I feel so fortunate that Brent is not riding off into the sunset. You know, Brent is continuing to work with us, and I know that I will continue to call on him in the weeks ahead as questions and issues come up, and particularly the many relationships that he has built that are really the hallmark of his time here, and look forward to meeting those friends and being introduced to them so that I can continue and build on his incredible work.
And as you can tell from this conversation, he's just as passionate about this subject as he has ever been. I want to thank both of you for being here for this podcast. And Amanda, good luck in the new position.
Thank you.
And Brent, thank you for sticking around and helping us as we go into this new administration.
You can't get rid of me that fast. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy that role. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. For more podcasts, visit our podcast page at bjconline.org/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes channel.